KALW. From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Elmwood, Berkeley.
I live in Mahate.
North-ish Oakland.
I live in the Western Addition.
Lake Merritt.
The Twin Peaks.
I'm from the Outer Sunset, and I love it.
Coming up, San Francisco is invaded by electric scooters for rent.
There's been this backlash from angry San Francisco residents. We've seen the scooters get vandalized. They've had their wires cut or the QR codes on the scanners get defaced so they're unusable.
How the city plans to regulate a new vehicle on the streets and sidewalk. Then we'll meet two men who are mapping noise to make transit corridors quieter.
Yeah, people get curious and they come and like yell in your microphone and you're like, I'm making a noise measurement.
Get to know the noise police. Improving transportation today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. It's been a wild month on the streets of San Francisco. Late in March, little electric scooters started popping up all over town. They look like those Razor scooters that kids ride, but these are for grown-ups. And they've set off a frenzy of controversy between those who want to ride them and those who want to throw them into the bay. So far, the scooter companies have all been operating without any kind of permits, but that could change soon. Tomorrow, the Municipal Transportation Agency is voting on a plan to rein in the scooter companies. Here to tell us what's next in the saga of the scooters is KALW's transportation reporter Eli Wirtschafter. So, Eli, hi.
Hello.
Goodness, these are all around.
Are you ready to talk about the scooters?
We need to talk about these. So, how did they get here?
The scooters belong to three private companies. They're called Bird. That's the company that seems to have the most. Mm-hmm. Lime Bike and Spin. And around the same time in late March, as it sounds like you've noticed, they all started dumping their motorized scooters in San Francisco.
All of a sudden. And who's behind this?
All the companies are tech startups slash mobility companies with venture capital backing. Mm-hmm. The founder of Bird actually used to be an executive at Lyft and then at Uber. And the other companies started with bike sharing and now are getting into this new game of electric scooter sharing. Mm. Altogether, these startups are reported to have raised more than $200 million in private funding.
So someone is betting they'll make a lot of money.
Yes. Their investors are hoping that this will be the next Uber or maybe like a lightweight Uber that makes money in transportation in a way that no one has ever really thought of before.
Mm.
But in this case, San Francisco is actually not the very first place that they have appeared. The first guinea pigs were the good people of Santa Monica.
Ah-ha.
Bird launched there last September. And like in San Francisco, they did it before any regulations were set up for this new kind of company.
Hmm.
So the mayor of Santa Monica has not been pleased. The city filed criminal complaints against the startup for operating without a business license.
Mm-hmm.
They eventually settled and agreed to get permits and pay $300,000 in fines. And then this spring, Bird started to roll out in other cities, mostly in California. And when the birds flocked to San Francisco, other companies were ready to roll out too.
So what are these things? How do they work?
So the way they work is that you use an app to find a scooter that's nearby. And you've seen them. They're just standing around in the street. They're
mm-hmm.
not locked to anything.
No.
You just need the app to turn it on and use it. And it's a rental. Most rides cost between $1 and $2.
Mm-hmm.
You ride it to your destination, and then you leave it. That's kind of the problem. Where you leave it?
Anywhere. They're just everywhere. That's what people are doing. And I don't know,
right,
man.
So the companies say you're supposed to park them out of the way, but a lot of them have been left blocking the sidewalk, or they get knocked over, or they're in a driveway or blocking a doorway.
Mm-hmm.
So some people see them as a kind of, basically a kind of litter.
Yeah.
And there's been this backlash against the scooters from angry San Francisco residents. We've seen the scooters get vandalized. They've had their wires cut or the QR codes on the scanners get defaced so they're unusable.
People are mad.
They've been stuffed in the branches of trees, thrown into the bay. And based on a picture on Twitter, some of them seem to have human poop smeared onto them.
Oh, gross.
So you could see this all as a big transit experiment. You could also see it as a public art experiment. And, you know, the city is playing in their way as well. The Department of Public Works has confiscated more than 200 scooters that they say were in places where they were blocking the public right of way.
Okay, what does the law have to say about all of this?
the law right now is that leaving a scooter blocking the right of way is illegal. You can park one like where you'd park a bike, on the edge of the sidewalk, not blocking traffic. Mm-hmm. The problem is, in this case, there's really no accountability for the rider. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't have to come back and get this scooter if it gets confiscated. And, you know, even if someone does park responsibly, that scooter could easily get tipped over by someone else and become a hazard.
Right.
Now, for the companies that want to create this kind of electric scooter sharing, there's really no laws on the books, either in the city or in the state. There are state laws about riding electric scooters. You have to wear a helmet, and you're supposed to use the bike lane if there is one, and you're not allowed to ride on the sidewalk.
But they are.
Yeah, so a lot of people are riding on the sidewalk, despite being told officially by these apps that they're not supposed to do it. But, like, it's the same as telling riders to wear a helmet or not to leave the scooter blocking the sidewalk. Mm-hmm. They can't actually control how riders use the scooters.
So besides confiscating some of the scooters, how has the city responded?
Well, so one thing is that the city attorney, Dennis Herrera, sent cease and desist letters to the three companies saying if they don't do something to stop riders from leaving scooters in unsafe places soon, the city will just shut the companies down.
Mm.
And the Board of Supervisors has also voted unanimously that any scooter sharing company will have to be permitted and go through a regulation process.
What would that look like?
So that's exactly what the SFMTA is about to vote on. Last week, they proposed a possible set of rules for scooter share companies.
Mm-hmm.
These rules would create a 2-year pilot program for companies that want to share electric scooters. They'd have to pay for permits. They'd have to provide data to the city. They'd have to do some kind of pricing plan for low-income riders. And probably most importantly, a maximum of 5 companies could get permits, and each company could only have a maximum of 500 scooters. So to give you a sense of that number, Bird alone right now has more than 1,600 scooters on the streets, according to KQED. So if these rules go into effect, we'll probably see a lot fewer total scooters compared to what we see right now.
But how would these rules do anything to stop people from leaving the scooters just lying on the sidewalk?
I think that's still a big question. It's not totally clear. The plan requires for the companies to educate their riders to follow the law, but, you know, that only goes so far because the apps already tell users that they should park the scooters out of the way. In the city attorney's cease and desist letter, he suggested that the company track the behavior of users and ban users who are bad parking repeat offenders.
Okay.
But, you know, ultimately, under these proposed rules, it would be up to the companies to figure out a solution. And the city would say to the companies, it's your responsibility, you figure it out, and we'll make you pay a penalty every time you break our rules.
So why not just ban the scooters?
So some supervisors want to see if this actually could be a good form of transportation, one that gets people where they want to go and takes cars off the road. Bird users took almost 100,000 trips during their first month in San Francisco. That's what they told KQED. So they became very popular very fast. And I think a lot of San Francisco officials like to see themselves as being on the cutting edge of transportation technology.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this could be the next big thing.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, officials also feel like they were run over by Uber and Lyft in the past.
Run over,
sorry, Hannah. And this time they want to have the upper hand. Mixed metaphor there.
Right.
They want to regulate the scooters somehow so they're not totally out of control.
Mm-hmm.
So these Wild West days of scooter sharing could be over soon. And I think we'll see if this is just a fad or, you know, like a new part of the urban fabric.
Eli is KELW's transportation reporter. The SFMTA plans to vote tomorrow on how to regulate all those electric scooters. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Living in an urban area, we all hear a lot of noise all the time. Planes, trains, cars, hundreds of thousands crisscross the bay every day, honking, whistling, roaring. But who says when it's just too loud? Casey Miner decided to find out in this edition of her podcast, The Specialist.
Here's what I have in common with Nancy Gangotra's 4-year-old son, Justin. I do not like the sound of the train.
Justin, do you like the sound of the train?
Mm-mm. I don't like it. It's so noisy.
It's so noisy?
So noisy.
Whenever you open your windows, there it goes.
Justin and his family live in a housing complex in Fremont, California, maybe a couple hundred feet from the train tracks. I met them on a Saturday morning when I knocked on their door to ask what it's like for them to live that close to the train. I asked because I live near the same train line, about 30 miles north, and here's what it sounds like at my place in the middle of the night. 3:45 a.m. to be exact. And here's what it sounds like just a few feet from Nancy and Justin's door. So noisy.
It's so noisy.
It's so noisy.
I'm Casey Miner, and this is The Specialist. Today, we're meeting two people who figure out how loud is too loud to take.
Jared McDaniel, acoustical consultant.
Jordan Roberts, also an acoustics consultant.
Acoustics consultants. In other words...
Noise police.
The noise police. They don't have badges, but they do have sound level meters, accelerometers, and a mission to wait for a train. There are a lot of laws about noise. Federal law says Americans are entitled to be free of noise that, quote, jeopardizes their health and welfare. In California, that means if you live near a busy street, an airport, or a train line, your house has to be built so that when you're inside, with doors and windows closed, the noise isn't excessive. Excessive is a noise level that averages out to be more than 45 decibels over the course of a day, which is about as loud as a normal conversation, quieter than a dishwasher running in the next room. To find out if noise is excessive, someone has to measure it. The noise police.
He's got the vibration stuff.
We're in Fremont, in the vacant lot next door to where Nancy Gangotra and her family live. The biggest things you need to know about this vacant lot are that the city wants to build new housing here and that it's very, very noisy. There's a busy 4-lane road behind us, a backhoe doing road construction, the train, obviously, airplanes. Oh, and it's windy. Basically, it's pretty close to the worst possible conditions for recording a radio interview or having a conversation at all. And that's what it's going to be like for the people who eventually live here every single day.
Exactly. And that's what you have to think about, is that we could potentially be sitting in our backyard right now. All of what we're hearing right now, you know, is going to be part of their life. And so that's what we're trying to document and quantify.
McDaniel and Roberts were already here a few days ago, and they measured the overall noise levels, the road, the trains, all of it. They do this by climbing up ladders and leaving microphones in trees to get a picture of how loud a place is on a normal day. The second thing they do, and the reason they're here today, is measure vibration, specifically ground-borne vibration caused by the train going by. Excessive vibration can be just as stressful as noise for buildings and for people.
It disturbs sleep and, you know, building. It can damage building materials and crack your walls and stuff. So that's what this is for, so we can tell them where they can and can't build their buildings.
Do that.
They didn't want to cover it too much because they didn't want to step on it.
Yeah.
To measure vibration, they're going to use a small instrument called an accelerometer that senses motion and acceleration. Once the accelerometers are buried, they connect them through cables to their recorders.
It's just a recording device, much as what your same exact instrument as you're using right here.
He's pointing at my Marantz recorder, the one I'm taping them with. Not gonna lie, this makes me feel kind of awesome. So if you were just walking by, you'd see two guys in jeans in a field with a long cable attached to a small box standing really close to the train tracks and just waiting.
I feel like if I just ran across this, it would have kind of a sinister quality. Like it looks like it might explode or something.
I've had some issues in the past where I was doing one and a police officer came flying around a corner and somebody must have called him. He thought we were trying to blow up the train.
The noise police had to explain themselves to the actual police. altogether, it takes maybe 15 minutes to set up. Then we wait.
How close are we to train time?
We should. I'm looking
at
just
10 minutes ago. I thought 12:20 was in my mind.
12:30 was in my mind.
Okay.
So I could. I thought it was 12:30-ish. So we're looking.
Oh wait, what did the schedule say? I think the free one.
While we hang around, we talk about other projects they've worked on and why they do this work at all. There are lots of good reasons to protect people from noise. Sleep disturbance is a big thing, and poor sleep is linked to other health problems like heart disease and stroke. Living with noise makes people's stress levels spike. Over time, they can suffer hearing loss. A recent study in Sweden suggested that noise can even affect our weight. People who lived near freeways, airports, and train lines had more belly fat than those farther away. I actually think I increased my own risk of all these things by doing too much worrying about them wide awake in my loud room at 3:45 a.m. Noise can have bad effects on animals, too, especially marine life. So a big part of what McDaniel and Roberts do is monitor underwater noise caused by building. They've monitored a Navy nuclear submarine project, a natural gas project in Alaska, and the construction of the new span of the San Francisco Bay Bridge. They usually go out in a boat and record with a hydrophone. That's a microphone you can use underwater. Sometimes I learned it also works outside of the water, like when they dangled it off the new Bay Bridge and it started receiving radio signals. Somehow the cable made itself into an antenna, honest to God.
We were trying to measure kind of ambient noise underwater, which typically sounds kind of like a gurgling sound, like river flowing or stream bubbling, and ended up hearing talk radio instead. It was kind of bizarre.
Christian talk radio, to be exact, through the hydrophone.
The people who were protected from the fury of God were the ones who were sighing and crying over all the abominations.
Usually, though, they skip the talk radio and actually listen to what's underwater. They go out in little boats or rafts and drop their mics near the construction equipment. Pile driving is the main offender here, pounding big steel poles into water to hold up bridges and docks. Here's what pile driving sounds like when you record it that way. Water muffles the sound, so as a human listening to this, it probably doesn't sound so bad, right? But to a fish, it's like the sound of firing a gun next to your head. In the Netherlands, researchers played recordings of pile driving for harbor porpoises in a pool. With nowhere else to go, the porpoises jumped out of the water to avoid the noise. When scientists at the University of Maryland exposed fish to similar sounds, they documented injuries ranging from organ damage to bleeding fins. Just like for people, there are laws about how much noise animals can be exposed to. And if it's going to be louder, whoever's in charge of the project has to mitigate it. My favorite solution to loud underwater noise is a thing called a bubble curtain. It's basically an underwater jacuzzi, a pipe or a set of pipes that encircles the steel pile and sends up a wall of bubbles around it to absorb the sound from the pile driver pounding it into the ground.
It makes a wall of bubbles or a ring of bubbles around, so the energy of the sound goes from water to air to water.
Got that? The bubbles absorb the sound waves, so by the time they get beyond it, they're a lot less powerful. Kind of like the difference between the sound of an airplane taking off down the street and making a smoothie in your blender. A lot of the worst effects happen with exposure over time, so another way to ease the pressure on marine life is just to give them a break from the sound.
If you exceed a certain level underwater, you have to stop for the day. Usually it's for the day. So you're not that we are, like Jordan said, we're not the noise police, but we'll say, hey, you're over the limit, and then you know, they shut themselves down and then start the next day.
Noise police. I'm just saying. The noise police and I chat for so long that I almost forget to be on alert for the train. But then...
Well, there you go. It's go time.
Yeah. Here,
I'll try to get speed. Jordan,
okay, cool.
We could split up the duties. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll... So let's go. Maybe if you could count number of cars, I don't have to think about that.
It.
Yep, that was it. 10 seconds to measure and then all over. When I checked in with them later, they told me that even though the train was moving pretty fast, because it doesn't go by all that often, the people who build the housing won't actually have to do anything special to counteract the vibration. All that outdoor noise, though, is a big problem. It's louder than the city allows. McDaniel and Roberts recommended building sound-absorbing walls around the site, requiring indoor ventilation, and using highly soundproof windows, which people will need to keep closed.
Part of what we do is, you know, we're saving the world or anything, but sleep disturbance and living a peaceful life is pretty important. And so, you know, we do our little part. Hopefully make people's lives a little more comfortable in terms of noise.
Of course, that comfort comes at a price. Nancy Gangatra, who lives next door with her family, she told me that when she was pregnant with Justin's brother, the train would wake her up at night. Now, they keep the windows in their house closed at all times. Do you mind that, like having the windows closed?
At times, yes. I miss having open windows. So we have more of air purifiers, which is not the natural way. But yes, we do miss it at times.
So, a confession. I actually don't keep my windows closed. That's part of why my noisy 3:45 a.m. bedroom is so noisy. I realize this makes my complaining my fault, but it gets really stuffy in there, and if it's too hot, it's hard to sleep. Anyway, since I don't want to close my windows and I can't wrap my bed in a bubble curtain, I decided to take the only remaining option and head for the pharmacy aisle at Target. So here we have two different kinds of Max earplugs for men and women. The women ones are bright pink. Earplugs. I have an ultra middle-of-the-night noise problem. I am going to buy the ultra man earplugs instead of the dream girl. Now, when I'm in my bed at 3:45 a.m., instead of sounding like this, it sounds like this. Not that I notice, because I can actually sleep through the night now. So one last thing. We talked about trains a lot in this episode, but the much bigger noise polluter is actually highways. You know those big walls on the sides of freeways? They're sound walls to block noise for the people on the other side. And the country's first one is still standing in Milpitas, California, just southeast of San Francisco on the side of the 680 freeway. For this, you may thank California transportation engineers John L. Beaton and Louis Bouget, who in 1968 wrote the report that got us that first sound wall. After spending some time listening to freeway noise, they wrote, quote, "You do not have to be a noise expert to expect certain public reactions."
I don't like it. It's so noisy.
It's so noisy.
That story originally aired in 2015. The Specialist is produced by Casey Miner, edited by Julie Kane, and engineered by Seth Samuel, who also composed the music you heard in that story. You can find the podcast wherever you find podcasts, and this radio home is right here at KALW. And that's our show. Today's Cross Currents team includes Nina Gensler-Debs, Angela Johnston, Amber Miles, Lisa Morehouse, Truk Nguyen, Marissa Ortega-Welch, and Josh Wilson. Our engineers are James Rollins, Gabe Graben, and Jackie Sajiko. The line producer is Liza Veal. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This music is by Las Dueñas. The San Francisco-based duo will celebrate their album release tomorrow night at Brick and Mortar. Show starts at 9 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
Yo, and Lakesha's got me thinking about where we fit in. Whipping all these rhythms, energy is streaming. Like a river beating with the mother beans. With all them healthy teachings, so I build a bridge to travel back and forth. Ignorance, I had a passport. Synthesis of inward healing. My sister's infinitely scheming. We intimately finding a way. Light of the night for the rights to say. Islands have raised us mine, I just pray.